memory box at home. You know what a memory box is? At least you forgot. Okay, good one. I like that. I like that. Okay, we're with it already. All right. At my house, at least, memory boxes are big boxes like we get the big plastic tubs, you know, and they're filled with macaroni wreaths and old report cards and all that kind of stuff. Most of you got some of that at home, right? All your parents. That's what we do, and I got tubs and tubs of them at home. And we've recently been doing some purging at our house, you know, with the recent health scares we've had and things like that. And just, actually what happened was my daughter came up to me and put her arm around me not too long ago and said, "Dad, love you very much. I hope you grow up to be, you know, grow to be 90 or 95 years old or 100 years old before you pass away. But I just have one request. It may not be that long. You have a lot of crap. Get rid of it before you die so I don't have to, okay?" So we're busy getting rid of stuff out of our house and trying to get rid of things. But we have a rule: if things are in the memory box, they're sacred, right? They don't have to get thrown out. The memory boxes are those things where you put all those things, and then once in a while you reach in there and you pull them out. And you pull them out to remember things that have happened, things that are special, things that are important to you, sometimes really big things. Sometimes not so big things, but things that are important to you. And we have several boxes of them. I'm basically a pretty sentimental guy, all things considered. And so, you know, we love to save all that kind of stuff. I recently, as part of our purging effort, was purging all the books in my study. I have a nice little study with three of the walls are floor-to-ceiling bookcases, and they were filled to overflowing with books. So I spent some time purging all the books. I still have a lot to get rid of, but I at least made a little bit of, and I ended up with 8 or 9 shelves with nothing on them. No more books. Well, really neat. Thank goodness for Kindle, otherwise I never would have made it, but now I got through it. So I pulled some things out of the memory boxes and put them on the shelves. This is really cool, right? Because now I can see them anytime I want. We do the same thing with pictures. We have one wall in our living room that's just covered with pictures. And, you know, normally we take all the pictures and we throw them in a box or something. You know, now they're all digital. No, we're going to print them out. We're going to put them on the wall and we're going to look at them. And as every time we look at them, we're going to remember things. Because having things, past things called to mind is a really important thing. I even brought some of my memory box things. Pulled them actually off my shelf, not out of a box. Some of them you may recognize. Some of them you won't. How about this thing? Anyone know what that is? That's a wrestling singlet. I wore that a few years ago, okay? I don't think it's going to work. But at one time, I fit into that. That was my high school wrestling singlet, and it's sort of important to me, not only because I enjoyed my time wrestling, but one of the last times I wore this, I managed to convince a cute young girl to be interested in me, and 40-some years later, she's still around. So that has special memories for me, not only from my wrestling time, but because that's how I met my wife. So that goes up on my memory. My memory shelves there. Here's one that some folks may even remember. A brick from the fire. Okay, this is a gauge on how long you've been around here. If you were around here long enough to know what that is, the original building we had here burnt down back in 2000. And we managed within a few years to rebuild it into this. But I managed to snitch this little brick because that was a meaningful time in my life. And I think some of us that went through it, it was a very meaningful time. And now I get to thinking about that meaningful time every time I see that brick. Got a few more things here. I have a book from Ireland, 2006-2007. He actually... If you ever go visit Ireland, at least back then in 2007, we went and visited Ireland. we took that picture, which is going to, at the time, which is going to hook into the lesson here. And you could buy a special pass and go visit all the historical sites and things like that. And so I put that up there to remind a great time we had as a family. The kids were just getting to be college age, off on their own age. We, as a family, went to Ireland and spent that time together. So, and that was a very meaningful time. And so that's us. And we saved the book, and that's a special, special thing for me. And I just got one more that I'm going to share with you. I got a whole bunch more at home. You have to come over and visit me to see them. This thing. Young lady gave this to me by the name of Melissa North. A few folks may remember Melissa. She was the granddaughter of a member, and she eventually became a member herself. She was in one of the first Sunday school, probably the first Sunday school class I ever taught. She was in that, and she was the first person that I had the opportunity to lead to the Lord. I'd been with other people when they'd led someone to the Lord many times, going out witnessing with people and stuff. But this was the first time that I actually had the opportunity to do that myself. And so Melissa was always very special to me for that reason. And she must have thought something of the event herself, so she did that and gave it to me, and I was very touched, and that has a very prominent place on my memory, in my memory shelf now to look at. Children of Israel had a very moving and meaningful thing happen. And in Joshua 4, they did a memory wall, if you will, as well. Okay? So let's go there. Joshua chapter 4. If I haven't lost my Bible already. We're going to call this Stone Circles. Joshua chapter 4, and we're going to read a few verses and then go back and read the rest of the chapter, okay? So, chapter 4, verse 7, it says, "Then ye shall answer them that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it passed over Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever." Okay, flip the page over to verse 20, and it says, "And those 12 stones when they took out, which they took out of Jordan, did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, When your children shall ask their fathers in times to come, saying, What mean these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until you were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us, till we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever." Wow. We have to understand what's going on here in order to get the real impact of what's going on. So, let's take a break. We're going to do a little bit of Bible history 101, okay, right? Y'all know, and you're all Bible scholars out there. I know you've been in church all your lives. You know most of this stuff, but never hurts to remember. That's the theme, remembering, right? Never hurts to recall this stuff to mind. So, you remember who Moses was? He was the guy with the ark, right? No. Moses was the guy that that led the children of Israel out of captivity, right? They crossed the Red Sea. You've all seen the movie, Ten Commandments, all that kind of stuff. And what happened? They got to the Promised Land, on the brink of the Promised Land. They were ready to cross over. They sent some spies, Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb said, yeah, there's some other folks there, but we can lick them. We got God on our side. The rest of the people said, don't really think so. And because of that, God said that they would wander in the wilderness for 40 years until that entire generation was gone. And so they wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years. That's the end of the book of Exodus. And so the book of Exodus, Joshua picks up where the book of Exodus ends. Joshua begins. They've gone the 40 years. They're standing back where they were 40 years ago on the banks of the River Jordan, ready to go into the promised land. Moses has just died. Remember, he couldn't enter the promised land because of a mistake he made, a sin that he did. And so he passes away. And so Joshua is now the leader of the people. Think what that means for Joshua, okay? For 40 years, he's been second in command, or you know, one of the generals, but not the guy they're looking to. That guy has now passed away, and Joshua has an outstanding opportunity in front of him, but I have to think he's also a little bit scared about all this, don't you think? I would be, you know, uncertain about how all this is going to take place. But he rallies the people, and they get ready to cross the River Jordan. The only people that are left, besides Joshua, are the people that were born while they were wandering in the wilderness, people that were born in the captivity. The entire other last generation has passed away. We make a big deal about our generations, you know, the millennials. I'm a baby boomer. I'm a Gen X on my team that complains continually about millennials and things like that. Joshua didn't have any time for that. He had a bunch of hungry young people that he needed to lead in to the promised land. There was one problem. They had something between them and the promised land, the River Jordan. It was actually the spring season when the river was at its highest, overflowing its banks. It was big and wide and difficult to cross. And so in the first part of Joshua, the chapters we didn't read, God tells Joshua what to do. He says, Joshua, take the Ark of the Covenant. You all know about the Ark of the Covenant, right? You watched Indiana Jones. You know all about it. So, okay, that's not the real version, but you got the idea. It had been leading them through the wilderness, and it had one last time it was going to lead them, and that was across the river. So the priests took the Ark of the Covenant, and they stepped into the river, and the river dried up. And all the people could march across the river. And now we're getting real close to our text verse here, because that's how chapter 3 ends. And when chapter 4 begins, Joshua is commanded to do a strange thing. So let's go back up to chapter 4, verse 1. And it came to pass when all the people were clean passed over Jordan, that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe a man, and command ye them, saying, take ye hence out of the midst of Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood firm, 12 stones, and ye shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where ye shall lodge that night. Later on, we learn that the name of that place is Gilgal. Gilgal actually means standing, or it means stone circle. It comes from a root word meaning circle or wagon. There were several other places named Gilgal. We're not real sure where this particular Gilgal is. We have a general idea. They were to take stones, put them where they'd been holding the Ark of the Covenant, or they were to take stones from where they'd stepped in and take them across the river, which is dry now, and take them to where they were in a camp and put them in a circle. Why would they do that? Then Joshua called the 12 men, when he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe a man. And Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God in the midst of the Jordan, and take you up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder, according unto the number of tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? Then he shall answer them that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it passed over Jordan. The waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. And the children of Israel did as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the middle of the midst of Jordan, as the Lord spake unto Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them unto the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. We're going to come back to verse 9 in a minute. Let's jump down now to... Well, we already read the end of the chapter, so let's talk about that for a second. Y'all got the picture now. Y'all see what's happened. They've taken stones out of the river and put them on dry shore, put them in a big circle. Why? As a remembrance, as a memorial, as something to remind them. What a powerful picture when you really think about it. Why did they do it, though? What is the picture of? Well, what had God just done for them? Delivered them out of their wandering. Delivered them into the promised land. And now he sets up the first thing they do when they're in the promised land is set up a memorial to remind them what God did for them. I'll call that, this is a memorial that reminds them of the one that went before them. God had gone before them, preparing the way, and now brought them into the promised land. Do we have anything like that in our lives? Think about your spiritual life and how God brought you through the wilderness. What's about the first thing he asks you to do after you've been delivered from the wilderness? Baptism. Why? Because baptism is a picture, just like this is a picture, an image of what has happened to us to remind us of what has happened and to show to other people what has happened. We get baptism all confused in the spiritual world, right? A lot of people, you know, put a lot of stock into it as being something that that somehow imparts special grace on them. Some folks even say that special grace saves them. Some folks put no importance on it. The scriptures clearly teach, and we see that here, where the importance is not in the act itself, but in the imagery that the act gives us. Paul tells us that in Romans. If you go to Romans chapter 6, most of you have probably seen that. It says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Paul's discussing the issue of faith, grace versus works and things like that. And he's just finished convincing them that we are saved by faith, not by what we do. Well, the next question is, well, can we do what we want then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know ye not that many of us, as were baptized into Jesus, were baptized into his death? Therefore, we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. For if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we shall be also in the likeness of his resurrection. You got the picture? We, in baptism, symbolically, do exactly what Joshua did here, right? They were delivered. We are delivered. We are baptized. to show we are delivered, to create a picture, to emphasize to ourselves and to other people what has happened to us. Same way with the Lord's Supper, right? You've all been around, you know about the Lord's Supper. Its importance isn't that it saves us, imparts any special grace to us in any sort of magical way or anything like that. Its importance, and the reason why we make it a very solemn occasion, is because it shows something that happened for us in a very vivid, pictorial way, right? We say, when we take the bread, that's his body. When we drink the juice, that's his blood. Not really his body, not really his blood, but it's showing in a very vivid way what has happened to us. The importance of the memorial is to remind us, of what we've been through, what has happened, and what God has done for us. Not what we did. What did they do? What did the children do here? What did the people do? They walked across a dry riverbed. Is that a very hard task to do? Where was the magic in that? Where's the power in that? Where's the majesty in that? It was in the damming up of the water, right? Isn't that true of our salvation? What do? We have this meager faith. We make a choice. It's not on us, but it illustrates the power of the one that's come before us, the power of God. We see that in baptism. We see that in the Lord's Supper. By the way, we're going to go read chapter 5. You know what they did right afterwards in chapter 5, right after stacking the stones up? They did circumcision, which is sort of like the Old Testament version of baptism. Some differences, but especially if you know the details of circumcision, there's some differences. But pictorially, it's much the same. And the Passover, which is pictorially much the same. They did the same things that we do. We have a lot of other memory things that we do as well, right? To help us remind us. It's interesting that part that I just talked about in 1 Corinthians about talking about the imagery of the Lord's Supper. It starts out by saying, these things do in remembrance. And then it talks about a bunch of other stuff before it actually talks about the Lord's Supper. It talks about how we treat ourselves, treat each other. That was a real problem that the church at Corinth had, right? You've all been around, you studied the book of Corinth. They had real problems with how they were treating each other. Each one wanted to be the best. Each one wanted to show off to the others. Each one, you know, they'd sort of lost their way. The way we treat each other is a testimony, a memorial to what God has done for us, the power he's done. Do we treat each other with love, kindness, concern? But this was a special memorial. Notice both in the middle of the chapter in Joshua and at the end of the chapter in Joshua, what does it say? Who's it to be a memorial to? It says, you guys do this because you need to show your children what happened. It's not really a memorial for them, per se. They just went through it. It's a memorial for those that will come after them. Let's read that just to cement it in our lives, in our minds. Verse 20, and these 12 stones which they took out of Jordan did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And when he spoke unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? Then ye let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. The real purpose of the memorial was so they could use that to teach their children and their children's children. This is especially meaningful to me now that I'm in the grampy stage, you know. Get to play with the grandkids and that kind of stuff. And you realize they don't know nothing, okay? Except what you teach them. What do we teach them? Joshua said, God, the Lord told Joshua, here's something I want you to teach them. I want you to teach what I did for you to them. I want you to tell them what I did for you. I got thinking about that. I got convicted about that. We bring our kids into, my kids were raised in church. You know, you bring them in, you set them in the Sunday school class and they color the pictures and, you know, they learn the stories, Zacchaeus and, you know, and Peter in the boat and all that kind of stuff. That's not bad. That's good. They need to do that. Turns out that's not really enough, is it? You're going to learn the Bible stories all day long. What's God really want us to teach them? What happened to us? We're sort of scared to do that sometimes, aren't we? Everyone wants to look good in front of their kids. Sometimes what happened to us isn't good stuff. But boy, what the Lord did for us was a good thing. If you exercise your testimony in front of your kids, if you told them, not here's the story of Zacchaeus, here's the story of Peter in the boat, those are good things to tell them. Have you told them, this is what happened to me. On this day was the day that I met the Lord. And I got thinking about that, and I said, I've told my testimony a few times in church. Love to tell it. You've all heard it. No? Guess what? I'll tell it again, because I love to tell it. I was at the county fair back in, I was about 10 years old. I was helping my grandma, who had a craft booth at the county fair, and some church had a booth at the county fair. And so I was, looking around, keeping my eye out for them. This is the late 60s now, so that's when cults and things like that were really big things in the news. And I saw them talking to my brother. And I was just sure that this was some cult that was going to kidnap my brother. And sure enough, pretty soon they're leading him out the tent, out into the back. And I was followed along behind because I was just sure I was going to see them stuffing my little brother into a white van to take him away, never to be seen again. I was going to offer to help, hold the door open for him, whatever it takes, it wasn't a cult. It was a church that led me to the Lord. Led him to the Lord that day, too. Matter of fact, they left me with a little memorial. A little book of John, a little red book. I didn't bring it this time, but I have my 10-year-old name printed in the back. Says that, yes, I accepted the Lord as my Savior. I've told that story a few times, quite a few times. Love to tell it. I got convicted as I was thinking about this. Have I told that story to my kids explicitly? I don't know that I have. But isn't that what God is saying here? You just went through this, people. Now, I want you to set those stones up so that you can tell your kids about it. 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, they don't know anything about it. You can tell them what happened to you. And then they can tell their kids what happened to Grandma and Grandpa. And they can tell their kids what happened. One word came to mind as I was thinking about this, the word intentionality. It's actually a word. I looked it up. Thought I was making up a word. Turns out someone beat me to it. It's a real word. Intentionality. That's doing things with a specific purpose. And I wonder sometimes if the ministries of our church, kids' ministries, even other ministries, if sometimes we don't lack some intentionality. We're talking about this because we're talking about the teens going down to King's Dominion. And in the activities committee, the question came up, why are they going to King's Dominion? Well, why is that a question? King's Dominion's a fun place to go, right? You guys, you, Sarah, you like to go to King's Dominion, right? Okay, fair enough. It's good to have fun. Nothing against people having fun. Gosh, if we have intentionality in our ministries, won't we use this as an opportunity to reach out to our friends, our neighbors, things like that? Invite them along? Have the opportunity to say, come with us, have some fun, and also, we're going to talk some spiritual things. We must have intentionality about everything we do. And when churches lose their way, they often lose their way because, not that they're doing anything in of itself wrong, but they lose sight of their purpose. They lose sight of their vision. They lose sight of why they're doing things. And the Lord said, I don't want that for you, children of Israel. I don't want you, as you get off of there into the promised land, to lose sight of what I did for you. Here's a memorial. Use that memorial to teach your children and teach your children's children. Wow. Oh. I called that one the ones that will come after them. This is a memorial not just for the one that came before them, but for the ones that came after them. One last thing, what they left behind. I skipped a verse, right? You all notice that? Verse 9, never want to skip a verse, so let's go back to it. Because I didn't really give you quite the whole story. Verse 8, remember, they came and they took the stones out of the riverbed, put them up on the shore, took them over to where they encamped, built the stone circle. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan in the place where the feet of the priests which bear the Ark of the Covenant stood, and there they are unto this day. If you think about that, it makes no sense at all. What happened? Joshua just made a big show of 12 big, strong guys getting big, huge rocks and putting them on their shoulders and carrying them off out of the riverbed. And what's he do? Gathers up 12 more rocks and puts them right where the first rocks were. Why in the world would you do that? That's a good question. As a matter of fact, I started researching it. I read all sorts of cockamamie reasons why. The internet's a wonderful place, right? Anyone with half a brain and an internet connection can now be a theologian. There's all sorts of reasons people have postulated about what can happen, but, you know, I'm a simple guy, and I don't think you need to make this all that complex, right? If taking those rocks out of the riverbed is symbolic of God's deliverance, especially God's deliverance in salvation, then what's the leaving of the rocks? When you were saved, did you leave something behind? Did you leave an old body behind? Water is off. Where are those stones now? They're in the middle of the river, right? Underwater. Water is often a sign of God's judgment, isn't it? That whole ark thing and, you know, rainbows and all that. God's judgment came upon those rocks. And they're left there, judged. Where are we? If it weren't for God's deliverance, where would we be? Judged. We'd be there at the bottom. And as it is, who brought them? Put those stones in place. Joshua did. Notice that little tricky thing there. He had the men carry them out, but the replacement stones he brought himself. Joshua is a picture of Christ here. His name even means Jehovah's salvation. Joshua, as a picture of Christ, is giving a replacement for those that were saved. And the judgment happened upon the replacement. That's what happened to me at that county fair. Was at that county fair, my way across on dry ground was made for me. And something was left in my place. A rock. Matter of fact, the rock. Jesus Christ was left in my place to take my judgment in my place. Rocks are heavy things, right? We carry around heavy burdens of sin. What a picture it was that those guys could go across the river and dump their rocks. They're no longer burdened by sin. How about that rock that was left there? Wow. What a testimony. What a picture of what has happened to us. We often say that our sins are gone when we get saved, right? Guess what? They're not really gone, are they? Oh, they're gone from us. But what happened? They were put on Christ. He became our substitute. He became our propitiation. He became, we have all sorts of fancy theological words, but it's not complicated. He became the rock that was left in the middle of the river for us so that we could get out on the other side. That's part of the story as well, don't you think? How powerful that is. That's what Christ did because he loved me. He became my, took my place in that river of judgment. And I owe him everything because of that. Because if it weren't for that, I would have no hope at all. Okay, how about you? We're having an invitation. Ray, come on up. He's going to play an invitation song. I suspect most of you are saved. But if not, now would be the time. Or if you are saved, maybe you've been carrying the burden. Maybe your rock has been left in the river and you keep trying to swim back to pick it up. Pick up those sins. To work where Christ says, I've taken care of it for you. Everyone, please stand. We're going to open the altar. The altar's open if you want to come up and pray. The Lord speaking to you and saying, your testimony's not been what it should. You've not pointed out to others the stone circle that God did for your life. Now would be the time. Come on up. You want me to pray with you? I will. You just want to come up and pray by yourself. That's okay, too.
Once was blind, but
maybe
you
just have something you want to, standing there in the pew,
want to
pray.
How,
let the Lord speak to you.
When he
let the Lord say,
me,
what's the picture that your life paints?
Was blind, but now
is there a testimony
see,
there?
And now my life song sings, and now my life song sings, and now my life song sings. I once was dead, but now I live. I once was dead. So